All right, everybody, welcome back to The Human Occurrence. It's the first day of spring here in Australia. So wherever you are tuning in, I hope you're having a great day, night or afternoon. I'd first off like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, past, present and future. This is episode 5, coming in hot. Our guest on the show today is Michelle Shannon. Now, Michelle Shannon is a local wedding celebrant, and we really dive deep with Michelle in this episode about her cancer journey, her mum's journey to death, and how she supports herself and her family psychologically and emotionally. So as always, the show is going to be full of value. Anyone who's on a cancer journey or, you know someone who is, then this is the episode for you. So as always, buckle up. This is going to be a jam-packed episode. Let's dive into it. Here we go.
I don't know. What kind of... I don't know, maybe something like a garden.
I change mine every episode, and I've got a fascination with spaceships, and this is the first time I felt comfortable being in a spaceship with someone. So that's you.
Well, I've got all my family surrounding me, as you can see, so I'm almost comfortable with them overlooking me and keeping me safe anyway.
Yeah, it's perfect. I don't have my actual office is not that attractive. You've got a really nice light room. I've got like this off yellow color. So that's partly the reason as well.
Oh, well, the spaceship, it suits you.
Thank you. How did you sleep?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. It's a changing world. I suppose at night I'm trying to learn to turn off a little bit better. It's not been easy. It's been an unusual year all round, and I've consoled a lot of brides and couples this year who have all their dreams and have changed. So that's where I've probably spent most of my time.
Right. To be a bit more stiller, like I really find it hard as well. For a lot of years I was in, before I started getting therapy, I was in an aspect of myself which was the doer driver. So I used to get up in the morning, I used to have a list to tick, I used to be able to like make money, build my business, support the family. And then when I started to get a bit more awareness around my life, I was like, holy shit, that is me, but it's just an aspect. So going into COVID for me was, number one, it was perfect timing for me because mum obviously passed, and the world was like, well, how about you just have 6 months off and grieve? And I was like, well, that's great. I'll do that. But it was difficult. It was difficult for me to slow myself down, which was interesting.
I think it's difficult to slow yourself down anytime. I go through really good realms of slowing myself down, feeling like I'm right on track. And then, sometimes it's as bad as turning on the TV that can sort of send you into hyperspace, I suppose.
Where I'm at.
Yeah. But I've just started with creature yoga, and beautiful teacher is quite mindful, and I'm really enjoying her, just her wisdom and thoughts and clearing the mind in the morning. And, these are things I never did. 2 years ago, I wouldn't even known how to go to yoga or even consider it. Whereas now meditation and yoga are two things that I think are really key, and it's a shame that we're not all taught it at school, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And, for me, it's been about 18 months since I've been meditating, but I do a lot of breath work, and it's just really purifying for me. It just drops my nervous system. It took me a while because I actually got quite turned off with some, because Laura was always suggesting to me, hey, you should consider meditating. And I was just like, Don't even mention that. I wasn't open to it. But for me, it was like the commitment of going into a room and sitting down, having structure turned me off. But right now with my daily practice, I don't have a structure to it. But I either do like movement, sounding, I'll do breath work or stretch. And I just won't have a real structure. But one of those things will happen while I journal. And the results, I think especially for men as well, I think, I highly recommend it to anyone who's bit, you know, a bit too busy and needs to kind of find a calm space within them. But hey, yeah. Michelle, I'm really interested to talk to you about how did you initially become a celebrant, and what, not how did you become, why did you become a celebrant?
Well, it's just one of those light bulb kind of moments. I think I had been in that age group where I was going to all my friends' weddings, and my sister had been married and my brother got married. And I remember sitting in church, and no disrespect because I love going into a beautiful church, I actually felt like all I wanted to do was have a drink or have a nap, because it was going on for so long. And I think the touchstone was one of my friends got married and had this huge service, and I remember the minister talking about divorce more than he talked about marriage, and that really struck home with me. And they got divorced a few years later, which really, as soon as I was in that service, I went, oh gosh, we should be talking about happiness and love. And then I went to a wedding as a guest in Perth, and I didn't actually know the couple, but from the minute the ceremony started, I felt part of it. I felt welcomed. I felt relaxed. I felt at ease. I actually really enjoyed it, and throughout the whole day, even though the celebrations were so much fun, it was the ceremony that I remembered the most. And I came home and went, I can do that. And so, you know, that's like 15, 16 years ago now. So when I started, I was the youngest celebrant. Everyone goes, celebrants wear a caftan and a big hat and they're like old. And I was like, yeah, but I think it should turn around. I think that people should have fun and should remember that part. And and if people write back to me and say, look, you know, out of the whole day, the ceremony was my favorite part, then it's a real joy for me, because I know that I've actually done my job well.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you respond to like talking in front of people initially?
Well, I was lucky. I was already in sales and marketing. So I was already, I was working in travel industry. So I was already presenting to up to 200 people at conferences. Public speaking at that point was something I kept putting myself in front of. I also worked with June Daly Watkins in Brisbane at the time. And in their school, I was their school leader or school manager. And I learned so much just about presentation and, you know, talking to people. And I suppose it's just I've taught myself and work has taught me. So that's what then made it much easier for me to stand in front of people. Do I still get nervous? Of course I do, especially when you have people that are celebrities from TV or somebody that you think, oh, my God, these people don't even need a script, you know, and I'm reading off a script. There's still days I get really nervous, but sometimes it's more nervous excitement than it is too much nervous.
Do you think it's like a natural thing for the human body to kind of get nervous in a situation where you have been, but it's like a different crowd, different people, all that? Because I can relate to, like, I haven't done heaps of public speaking. I've done like at weddings, what it's called, like best man speeches, and I've been the MC and all that. But the nerves for me, because I had a sporting background, the nerves for me were like, I used to get nervous over the simplest of things, but I used to know that I used to be able to I'd be performing well if I was going to get nervous. And as soon as like the whistle blew or it started, it just dissolved. So do you think that's a natural thing for the body to get nervous, or do you think it's just?
Definitely. I'm more nervous when I'm actually doing rehearsals sometimes. So I'm rehearsing what I'm going to say at the wedding, sometimes making sure I get through the Byron traffic, you know, some of those days when it's all clogged up. Yeah. So I sometimes the build up to get there, whether it's the weather or whether, you know, it's usually once I arrive and everybody feels, okay, we're here, we're ready to go, then the nerves sort of can disappear. But yeah, look, I've had so many things happen. I've been through hailstorms, cyclones, floods. Oh my gosh, I've had so many weird things with animals. I've had eagles, birds, dogs. I mean, kids screaming their heads off. I mean, you go through everything. Lost rings, fainting people. Wow. I mean, you just have to kind of pull it together and not look be in total shock and just go, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
We're going to have a great time, and pull everybody back to that moment. And that's, you know, that's where the beautiful practice of breathing and meditation and all that come in, because sometimes just that one deep breath
helps.
Just can change everything in your whole body.
And what a special industry to be a part of. You know, like, you really are there in such a significant time in people's lives. Like, that must be so cool, you know, like out of everything, what you can do in terms of working, being there at the start of a marriage is pretty cool. You know, Kylie wants to do that.
Well, she should. I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think, you know, the nice thing is that a celebrant inspired me. So if I go to a wedding and somebody else becomes inspired, then that's wonderful, because I think it's a beautiful job. And you know, it's always a great, like, you know, yesterday I married a couple who had moved their wedding, couldn't get married in April. Right. They've moved all their celebrations to next year. They were going to go to the Hunter Valley. And then 3 weeks ago, their other celebrant rang me and said, look, they're just going to come to Byron for a week. Can you marry them? She transferred all the documents to me. We went down to the beach yesterday. There was a pot of whales, a rainbow, a beautiful afternoon. And, you know, there were tears, and their family were all on Zoom. And you come home and you go, oh, it couldn't have gotten more beautiful if you tried. All those elements just don't always happen on the spur of the moment. So, I mean,
that's right.
You know, that's the nice thing about the job, is there's lots of moments where you do truly feel really elated, and you get these beautiful notes on Monday morning.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. Do you think, like, how we're living right now in COVID, do you think weddings can be still as authentic as they were when, yeah, they can be?
I think at the moment weddings have become, and my husband's had to be witness at quite a few of these smaller elopements, he's just even been saying, wow, I was crying, or that was really emotional. It was great to see. I mean, it's changed everything. But I think two people, it's coming back to the ground roots. Why do you want to get married? Who is it that you want to get married? It's not always just about the big party and the cake and the dress.
That's right.
You can still have that.
Mm.
But it comes back to just the two of you. And like the couple yesterday said, we've been lying around the pool, having cocktails. I just did my hair and makeup, put on a really cute little dress. And there was quite a lot of emotion there yesterday. You know, and there was myself, my husband, and the photographer.
Yeah,
and
great.
Apart from family on Zoom. And to me, it had just as much emotion as, you know, some of the big ones I've done.
It could probably, like, really, like, cut through all the, and I, you know, I wouldn't call it bullshit, but you know how, like, you know, like, couples can get really into, like, the day, and it's all about everyone else, you know, like all the little details and the food and the wine and all that. And there's so much, like, anxiety and nerves. So it might just cut all that crap out and just go back to what's really true. And that's union.
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It is definitely cutting it back to what's the most important thing, is that you want to get married and that you love that person. And if anything's going to try us in marriage, COVID is trying out my couples. You know, they've either got to live together and work together now.
Yeah.
Whereas before they probably had space and freedom and friendship and movement. Mm. Now, if you don't like living with that person and you're in lockdown, you're never going to spend the rest of your life with them, because this is probably what retirement's going to be like down the track. So, it's really cutting it down to what's really important. And, you know, I've had a few of the elopements that have gone ahead and we're going to then have this big party, have rung me and said, you know what, we're really happy with being married. We just decided we're going to catch up with our family and friends in different groups at different times, and we're going to do something different. But, you know, it doesn't mean that they can't have this big celebration later. Some of them have been videoing it, so that when they actually come back to that celebration, they can sit back and have a champagne and actually watch their wedding ceremony.
It. Yeah, that's cool.
And enjoy it with everybody else without having to do the big aisle walk and the nerves and, worry about the spray tan and the hair and the drunken nights before, which they've already had. So I don't know. Maybe this is going to turn it all around and we're going to have a different type of celebration.
Yeah, I reckon. You know, especially with, you know, your funerals, you know, how that looks and how weddings look, how a lot of things look in terms of, you know, people gathering. I think it's a really interesting time, and who knows what it's going to turn out like. It's going to be, we'll have to wait and see, really. But we started chatting briefly yesterday about your mum, and I was really interested in it. And there we are. So what's her name?
Joy.
Joy. Yeah, she looks like a joy. She's beautiful.
Yeah, she is. She used to tell me, because she was the happiest kid at school. I was like, okay, I always believe that.
You're right. So could you talk into that for us a bit about your mum and her journey through, you know, cancer and death and all that, and your relationship?
Look, Mum and I've always had a really close relationship. We're a very close family. And when she was in her sort of later 60s and she was diagnosed with breast cancer, stage three, it was in 15 out of 16 lymph glands. I remember the day the doctor after surgery said, oh, look, we give her 2 years. And I just remember that feeling of giving that diagnosis. This is it, like 2 years. And everything kind of stops in that moment. And looking back now, we all lived in fear for 16 years because that's how long she made it.
Wow, so it wasn't 16 years.
16 years.
Holy.
And what she did is she lived in fear. So every time we had to go to the specialist or the doctor, we all went like on a heightened note. We didn't sleep the night before. What's the blood results going to be like? I just remember that fear. So I look back and think, I lived in fear, not only for Mum, but for my own health for 16 years, which at times I wonder, did I create sometimes things that were going on in my own body when I was diagnosed only 6 months after she was to die?
Sorry, how old were you when she was diagnosed?
Well, gee, I was, I think about, what is it now? Probably nearly 20 years. So I'm 54 now, about 34.
Yeah, right.
And, I still remember that day. I still remember the day that your mum called me. So, you know, I remember those moments really clearly. It's a shame that there isn't, it's no easy way to tell someone that they've got cancer, but it's a real shame that there isn't a backup to sort of go say to people, listen, this could be go on for 20, 30 years. You don't know. You might never have it again. We'll just do our best to help. Live a good life, enjoy your moments, and you know, do the best you can. But there needs to be more. I wish Mum knew more of what I know now.
Because was that available back then?
No, well, not really. And yes, in cleaning out their house when we sold it about 5 years ago, I found boxes and boxes of books given to Mum that she never touched and never read. Right. And now I'm going back to look at a lot of those books because these are the books that were 20, 30 years ago saying, listen, it's as simple as cleaning up your diet, clean up the water you drink, clean up your dirty electricity in your house, take the toxic substances out of your life. You know, it's just simple things that I think everybody can do in their life. Admittedly, if there's a genetic link, it can't always be corrected. But boy, I'm doing my darndest now for my 14-year-old to make sure that she has all those things that I didn't have.
Yeah. And did your mum? So that's so amazing. She fought for 16 years. That is incredible. And did she pass at home or was she in the hospital or?
She put herself in hospital. So Mum did do chemotherapy and she did do radiotherapy. Both had their downfalls and probably their life saving. So I'm not going to say either way. She then went back for a second round of radiation in 2008, which then was so close to her esophagus and heart. She then got radiation poisoning, had a heart attack, was in hospital for some time. When she came through it all, which she did, she's always such a strong woman, it had affected down the track her esophagus. So in the last year of her life, she couldn't eat or drink.
Wow.
So she had to have a PEG, which is like a tube into the stomach. And while she was in hospital, she was really unwell on that. And I did some research and she was so sick in hospital. I just brought her home. Mm. And instead of giving her the milky substance that they give you in hospital, I actually started making her real food and feeding her and she got better.
Wow.
So I started with slow cooked bone broths and I'd let her smell it and just put it on her tongue so she actually smelt and felt like she was eating something rather than cold, up and go, you know. Shoving that stuff. And I'd make a scrambled eggs and olive oil and digestive enzymes and things. So every morning we'd be doing and we'd be feeding her nutrition. And she got really good, walked into the PEG feed doctor's name and he goes, wow, Joy, you're amazing. So he changed her PEG to a really tiny one and she starved to death. So virtually we couldn't get food through, we couldn't get any tablets and she'd given up. Then she said, you know what, I've had enough. Yeah. So she put herself in hospital. She told us all that that was the end. She called all her relatives in to see her. So she was in there for a couple of weeks. She made sure everyone came to see her. She rang everyone. She wrote notes to everybody. So that at the end she'd said goodbye. And then she even organised the administration of the morphine. So we had nothing to do with anything. But she did for the last few years, knowing that at some point her time had come, designed her own funeral. So for me, she would go take me to funerals and say, I love those doves. I want the doves. Don't give in. No unhappy music. I want happy songs. I want fun stories. I don't want anything too religious. I want it to be lighthearted. I want people to remember that. And one of the best things I did was I had my friend who's a filmmaker film Mum and Dad. And then we cut it down to things like, you know, what do you want to leave your friends to know? And she says, just live life and be happy. And we played that. She closed her own funeral.
That is amazing. And there's so much thought that goes into it. So, so, because a lot of people, well, not a lot of people from what I've heard, a lot of people around that time of death, they really struggle with the transition to actually get in and go, okay, well, I'm actually going to pass. I'm dying. Where your mum was like, yep, this is happening. She was just in another gear where she was like writing letters. She was organizing her funeral, having those really significant conversations. Where did that come? Do you think that was a part of her personality, her strength? Where did that come from, like, in terms of her relationship with death?
I do think that when you are diagnosed with cancer, death just becomes something that you carry around in your head, like, oh, my God, you know. You try to leave it, but I always say to someone, it's kind of like something at the back of your head that smacks you every now and then to go, hey, don't remember, just remember, you know, you've got to really take care of yourself, or, you know, you've got something else coming up. So I think that, you know, she was also watching a lot of her friends. A lot of her friends had passed with breast cancer around her. So she was also watching that. So, you know, she was just prepared. She was just a good mum, you know, probably overthinking and caring for us while she was still trying to help her own self. And I think as women in particular, and don't mean that as a disregard to men, but women put so much time and energy into too many things. And like you, Brent, I'm a bit of a list maker of, you know, got to get this done and got to get that done. Yeah. So you're going to bed going, I wish I could just close my eyes and and it's all done. But look, she was just, I don't know, she just organized. And you know, if there's anything to believe in angels and afterlife, Mum's had more than enough things that have come up for me. Here's a really good example. Months after she passed, I would find things like a card written to us, or I would find,
that is so cool.
I would be thinking about, you know, I'd see this butterfly in the morning and I'd go through an album, all of a sudden I'd see Mum holding this butterfly. When she died at 3:10, for 2 weeks before she passed, she'd been telling me that her watches were running out of battery. And I said, look, Mum, we just got to keep you well and keep you alive and stuff. I never did fix that watch. And when I went back after she'd passed and I was looking for photographs and trying to go through her personal items, I said, Mum, you need to give me a sign that you're with me. Mm. And when I looked down at one of the watches she wanted me to change, the time was 3:10.
There is so much magic in death. There's so much magic, isn't there?
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't know if you can see that. So look at this. Is a note that I found just recently cleaning out the last of their house. And it says, we love you so much. Stay well, written in a totally different pen. How many times have you said that to people in COVID? I've only just found that in COVID.
Wow.
And that's just out of an old album because Dad went into a retirement village last year. Yeah. And that was just something I found when I was going through everything. And that came up in COVID. Stay well. I've never heard her say that to me. Like, what? And it's in a different pen. Like, did she come back later and write that for me? But, you know, I think that's something that it's a personal thing and you take it however you want to. But, there's been so many things that happened in the last nearly 3 years since she passed that just every now and then I go, thanks, Mum.
Yeah. Because it's a really like wholesome feeling from my experience with death and Mum passing. I never thought that I'd feel so whole in my connection with Mum after she left. I just didn't think that really was really possible. Like, I think my human mind really struggled to grasp a hold of that. But when Mum died for me, like, you know, because we were there when she took her last breaths and all that, it was just such a wholeness that I felt from Mum. And now having, like, been able to access that, like you said, when you call upon your mum, or you, you know, you say, oh, that, you know, you talk to her and all that. I do the exact same with Jules, and she's right there, and I can feel her, and it's such a warm and amazing feeling, and it's a lot of like security, and the nurturing still there for me, but it really blew my mind afterwards, and just really feeling into how life kind of plays out, and you know, the spirit. And that for me has been one of the biggest gifts. And especially with my sons, you know, they talk to Nanny Jules every day. As soon as there's a light that comes through the window, they start dancing and hugging the light and saying it's Nanny. And there's just, yeah, it's just mind blowing how much death changes you and transforms you, and how your love transforms. So I guess what I want to get onto with you as well is the, so you experienced a whole bunch with your mother, and her life and going through that cancer journey. You did mention you felt like the initial stages of you finding out, and then those 16 years of being, you know, what was the word you used? Like, not stressed, but it was,
kind of living in, you live with a fear that's just sitting there somewhere. And it's amazing how something as simple as we're going to the oncologist, it's that time. Yeah, and you're like, yeah. You know, all of a sudden your ears and your shoulders are touching, and you're like, oh my God, we can't wait to see the results. And then he goes, oh, actually everything's not too bad right now. It's getting a bit better. And you're, oh, okay, I can breathe again. Mm. But it's terrible to feel like, you know, it's one thing I've really tried to address big time with myself is to not let the fear constantly overwhelm me, because, and you know, it's hard. It's hard at times because I've done everything naturally. I've done everything totally the opposite to Mum. So it's a bigger journey. It's much more expensive. Mm. And I'm probably keeping a closer eye on the way things are going for me than Mum did. Mum was told, just oh, go home and eat what you want and have what you, you know, just enjoy it. And for me, I've been really trying to tighten up on so much that I know Mum wasn't doing. But in saying that, I also want to have a bit of fun. So, you know, I'm at just over two years now. So I'm still trying to enjoy life too, because I think we forget to laugh. And that's one thing that, you know, fear always takes away that laughter and joy. And I find I'm laughing again and belly laughing, which I really love and I missed.
That's, Mum was doing a lot of that on her journey. She used to dance and laugh and get into that. She's like, I need to start laughing again. But where were you when you found out you had cancer? Like, what was the process there? Did you just have some pop up?
I had symptoms. I had symptoms 4 years earlier. So I had already been seeing a specialist, but they couldn't find anything, not even with MRIs, with mammograms, for 4 years. So I kept saying to them, look, something's not right, but they couldn't find it until all the stress of Mum and all of that kind of probably exasperated the situation, and bang, there you are. Mm. There was the lump. But still, even after I had my mastectomy, they found another 4 centimetres that no scan picked up. So, I mean, they say you often walk around with cancer for 5 to 10 years before it presents. So it's just sometimes, you know, one thing I found in therapy, and which was, I was doing IV therapy, vitamin C for a few months. And when I'd be sitting in the IV room with, you know, men and women of all different ages and groups, I started asking them, you know, was there anything significant that's happened in your life in the last 6 to 12 months? And every single one of them had lost someone, their marriage had broken down, they'd gone bankrupt, they had so much stress in their life. And it was a real eye-opener for me to actually see how much stress just kicked off that trigger. It was the trigger. And they say that if you ask most people within the last 6 to 18 months, there's been some major thing happen in their life before they have a diagnosis.
Because stress would be without a doubt, it, you know, it'll put your body in fight or flight, It hammers your nervous system. You go into that really reptilian part of your brain where you're thinking, you're trying to survive. It's like if you're in the wilderness and you come across a bear, you're not really fucking around with that situation. You're trying to survive. You're not going to be sitting there having a conversation with it. You're going to be running. How do you support yourself and your family psychologically along this journey? Like, how do you maintain a positive, mindset? Or do you allow things like, the conversation around death with your family? How do you maintain that psychologically for you?
Well, look, I suppose I've always been a fairly positive person, and I'd have to credit Mum for that, because she always gave me a kick in the pants when I was wallowing around about something so silly. Might have been that didn't catch up with my friends on the weekend. She'd let me, wallow for about a few hours, and they go, right, that's it, get up, get out of here. I have a nice life. I have a beautiful family, and I'm always fairly positive. I try to look at the fact that even if it's cloudy outside, the sun is definitely going to come out at some point. I've got a 14-year-old, and I'm constantly trying to take her out of fear, because not only did she lose a grandmother, she's also fearful that she's going to lose me. So for 2 years I've worked really hard at convincing her that she doesn't have to be the carer. I'm going to be okay, that it's all going to be right. So we try to just do things. I think COVID has actually given us more time together to just stop. Those early few months gave us a chance to stop and look at how beautiful our world is. We're very lucky where we live. And probably connect a bit more, especially when kids are becoming teenagers. You lose a bit of connection because they're so busy, caught up with their friends and what's happening. And I loved the fact that, if we didn't turn the TV on too much, it wasn't just disaster every day. We were actually seeing more beauty in the world. And that's what I try to see every day, and bring that home.
Do you think optimism is something that you can teach? Or do you think you were born with that?
Look, I was born, I was an incredibly shy kid at school. And Mum was always behind me going, come on. To end up being a public speaker and to do weddings is phenomenal. If you tell me that at 14 or 13, I would have went, no way, there's no way I'm ever getting up in front of more than two people in my life. It's interesting. I see a lot of myself in my daughter now. She's beautiful. She's empathetic, too empathetic at times, looking after everybody at school. I just try to give her, just a bit of strength. Come on, the day's going to be great. Look at what happened when we thought about this last time. Look how it's all turned out. Something as simple as recently she had all the friends moved in. There was only one table. There's only a couple of them. And I said, you know what? You just be happy and lighthearted, and all of a sudden everyone will come to you. And now she came home the other day and said, guess what, Mum? We've got the biggest table there. Everybody's come. And I said, see, it all works out. So I'm trying to teach her that, not to think about it too much, to just imagine that it's going to work out at some point. I mean, I don't know what else to do with kids.
That's it. I think you're practicing honesty, right? And not deceit, because I feel like there'd be a lot of people in, different scenarios with cancer and life-threatening diseases and illnesses and all that, that would struggle with that relationship and also conversation with their kids or loved ones or anything like that. For me, when I tell people about, some of my friends about how my boys were around Mum in those last moments and how transparent, obviously, I was giving age appropriate answers to their questions, being, Zev being, he wasn't even one at that point. Eli is 2.5, but when I was explaining to my friends that, they were around Mum, they understood that she was passing. She was also around, when she had left her body and the kids were there. They kind of struggled with that a little bit, but I just feel like it's such a lesson. And it's such a gift that you can give anyone, especially kids. And I just admit, you know, just like how I described to you about how the light comes through the window and Eli's like, Nana Jules is here. You know, and when he first did that, it scared the shit out of me because I was cooking and I was just like, kind of like in, in my body. I was just in robot mode. And for a second I went, oh fuck, mum's at the door. This is like a week after. I'm like, oh, hang on. She's obviously dead. But I just think it brings a lot of gifts to a lot of people's lives. And I really credit you on how you, your relationship with your daughter and being honest and open and letting that flow. Cause I really feel like that's a gift in everything. Do you think that how has she changed from those conversations? Do you think she's become more whole? Do you think
she's far more, like, you know, there are times I actually didn't see her cry a lot around when mum was passing. Yeah. And it was almost like she was holding everything in. And it's only been in the last 12 months or so that I've seen her cry at different things, but very quietly. And sometimes I just say, let it all out. Mm-hmm. I want you to cry. I want you to tell me what's going on in there. And she'll try to be strong for me, like, it's okay, mum, I don't want to talk about it. Okay, but if you talk about it to me, then we can work it all out, and then you can get it all out. Or I said, well, why don't you write it down? Write down all the things that are bothering you. And then, well, I'll put it in the bin, or we'll put it away, and then you don't have to think about it. So she started writing a lot more, which is great, because I think it's a great thing for kids to be able to write about it and just put it somewhere, a bit like all of us. Mm. But I've really encouraged her this year that if she wants to cry and have that moment, she should let it out. And then we can talk about it, and then we can work through it. And, you know, sometimes it could be an hour, and I just go, and then she'll come out to me and go, you know what, mum, thank you. I feel so much better now that we've talked about it. And I go, great. You know, that's how you can't hold it all in, because I said it's not good for you. And, you know, that's something I'm just trying to teach her, because she's, you know, this little cutie at the back here is trying to, look, you know, hold it together for all of us all the time, and it's not her job.
I think it's I think it's common for even adults, kids, anyone to, you know, I know for me genetically, I just want to close, you know, like I didn't see dad cry much, and I doubt that he saw his dad cry much or express any sort of really deep emotion. So for me genetically as a man, like, I really have to work on staying open. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And where do you think, like, in terms of kids, where do you think that comes from? Do you think that, like, comes from, because you're a fantastic role model, and I'm sorry, what's your husband's name?
Mark.
Mark. I was actually stalking Mark a bit. He's a good looking fellow. I was. But where do you think that that comes from? Like, do you think that comes from you know, because, like, opening up and not like suppressing it and holding it in and actually getting it out. Do you think it's, like, cultural, where we live, like school systems? Do you believe it's, like, you know, it comes from family? What's your thoughts on that?
I think she sort of, she's seen me cry more times than she ever needs to see me cry. So she knows if I want to let it out, I'll go for it. And I think there's been a part of her that, you know, cause my husband's also been through, open heart surgery 3 times. So he's had a lot to go through too. So she knows that she's got 2 parents who have got a lot of things going on health-wise. And I think she's a quiet little Cancerian who it comes definitely from the heart for her, and she just wants to be quiet and on her own, and she thinks about things in a different light. And, you know, Mark is very quiet in his thoughts and how he handles things, and he's you know, quite likes to just have that solitude at home, which I can see a lot in Georgia. She loves that solitude too. And although I quite enjoy it as well, I love getting out and being able to talk to people and have those beautiful friends that really connect with you. And I find weddings and even funerals, I find funerals quite enlightening. You know, I'm lucky, like yourself. I mean, I've done 4 funerals, where I've actually performed the funeral, unlike Jules, where I just wanted to weep my heart out. But you know, it takes a lot of work to not get so involved yourself. But I love that giving back. I think a funeral is giving back to somebody. You're giving them a chance, you're giving the family a chance to relive and say all the beautiful things and the frustrating things and the things that make it a good farewell. Yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I've got a little sensitive kid that I'm trying to just massage into. Come on, a little bit stronger. A little bit stronger. Come on, one day you'll be a public speaker. You'll be out in front of people. You'll be fine. And, it's, you know, her brother's a Cancerian as well. He's older than her. And he's now a school teacher. So yeah. I wouldn't have thought he would have ever been in the public eye either. I would have thought he would have been a much quieter. So, you know, life just turns around.
You can never underestimate a Cancerian. And I think I know Cancerians quite well because I'm a double. And I think with Cancerians is that, like, yes, we are sensitive, but there's a lot of beauty that we can see in the world through that sensitivity. Because there's a lot of senses with ours are very heightened. So I love that you said your daughter and your
my stepson.
Yeah, your stepson is Cancerians. That's great. That's, you know, what I don't think there's a better sign. What sign are you?
I agree. I'm a Virgo, so I'm a bit too anal and I'm a bit too list maker, like you said. I'm that kind of person. Look, we're opposites in so many ways, but then I look at her and I just see that beautiful, sensitive, empathetic soul. And you know, one of the most beautiful moments during COVID, which I know is not a time where most people be saying beautiful, is when you might have remembered the butterflies.
Yeah.
That were about breaking in Byron. Yeah. And there wasn't anyone down at the beach. We went down to Captain Cook's and there was the ocean was crystal clear. And she was floating around out there for ages in between doing schoolwork. And she came in and said, I don't need to go to Greece anymore, Mum, because I was lying out there and there were two butterflies flying around my head. And I thought, this is paradise.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, just seeing her actually see the world clearly and be really excited by what was happening with dolphins, you know, in Venice and things that were, you know, you could see the Eiffel Tower from London, all these crazy. She's Mum, look at that, look at that. And I thought, wow, thank God that in amongst the terrifying news, there's also some beauty coming of everything.
So much beauty. Yeah. And talking about the yellow butterflies, you actually mentioned them in the eulogy. And you know what? That eulogy, Michelle, was, fuck, that was awesome. That was so awesome. The whole ceremony was awesome. But for me in that ceremony, like I really broke, you know, and for me to actually get up and really embrace, you know, Mum and her life, I had to really hit that point. Talking in front of that many people really from the heart was a massive thing for me, my sisters and my dad. As you would know, but when you got up there, it just really hit a note with me. And you know, it was really beautiful that Mum contacted you first and you had that relationship with her. What was the conversation when she rang you? Can you bring me through that a bit?
Look, I was walking the lighthouse and she called me and she said, Shell, I've got some big news to tell you. I think it was a second person or something, second or third person. She said, I have liver cancer. And I was like, I just stopped and I went, oh my God. And we just had this long conversation and she's so positive. Like she was, you know what, I'm going to beat this. And I just want to get your thoughts on things. And, you know, and I'm no cancer specialist. You know, I just said, look, this is what I've been doing. Yeah. I believe in the natural way and it's not for everybody. Boy, it's certainly not for everybody. And, you know, look, she gave it a cracking red hot go at everything. And, you know, we just ring and support each other. If I'd seen something or I'd seen a podcast or a book she might have liked or some more information. There was once that I had this appointment with a specialist up the coast that she couldn't get into. I said, you know what, I don't need it. You take my appointment. So I gave her my appointment to go and see a specialist oncologist. I wish I could have done more, you know, at that time. But, you know, it wasn't just nice to have that connection. Just even just that someone to check and say, are you okay today?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, do you need a can I give you a hug, or can I send you something? And I know she was really busy doing treatments and trying the best, and she did the best she could. Boy, there wasn't a stone unturned for Jules.
No, there wasn't. You know? There wasn't. You're right with that. And she gave it her all. And I think that really played a telling part when we all got on the same page and knew that she wasn't going to make it too, because she was like, you know what? And it was a really significant moment between the family and I, family and her. And she was like, you know what, guys, this is not a fight. I'm sick of fighting this. You know, I want to, this is a journey. And that, you know, I'll remember that for the rest of my life. There's a lot of things I'll remember for the rest of my life with mum. But you know, there was so much grace in that moment, and there was so much power and courage, you know, that she was like, I'm sick of fighting this. We've done so well, you know, we've done so well, we've tried everything. And that for me from that point is really where the magic started to happen, you know, and witnessing that with mum, and just, you know, I think a lot of people would be like, well, this is, I don't know if there is beauty in that, because, you know, her body was breaking down, and I get that. But for me, there was just enormous amounts of beauty because of the connection it was bringing to me and my family, to mum and dad, to play witness to their love was next fucking level. That was just, I can't actually explain that, you know, like I'm getting emotional now.
They had such a great love story. I mean, so it amazing. It is,
but just witnessing dad and mum, it was, so
your dad was just so incredible, honestly. I remember going and seeing this folder he had created with everything in it. I was just like, wow, no one did that for me. I was doing that for me, but your dad was there 100% of the way. And you know what, that's just incredible, because a lot of people get fearful, partners get fearful and stand back. I don't want to do, if you're not going to do what the doctor says, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, I'll just stand over here and you just carve your own pathways. You're just embraced and went, you know what, whatever you want, we're going to do it. And I love that about your dad, and that was a great relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one thing that really taught me is that courage. So with courage for me, it was like, courage doesn't really come with the absence of fear or hurt, you know. Usually when you're stepping into courage, that comes with it. But they were able to really look that in the side and go, move out of the way. And she really did death well, and dad and all the girls, it really transformed all of us. But what a gift. So the second last question I've got for you is, what are the gifts that you've experienced from other people dying in terms of death that have been close to you, and what you've experienced? What sort of gifts have come out of it for you personally?
But I think the gift is that you hopefully get to a point where it's all just the beautiful memories. It's all the good memories that come back. You know, like, it's nearly 3 years now since I lost mum, but you know, it's nice things. Like you said, you know, sometimes I'll just be driving down, you know, and there's this massive double rainbow comes out, and I go, oh my God. Yeah. You hear, I don't think I ever stopped. Like, I went for a walk with the dog this morning. I was like, look at that bird in the tree, and how beautiful is the light on the cloud. Like, I didn't do any of that before. I just rushed through life. Like, I've got to get there. I'm like, what finish line am I getting to? Where am I going? Like, what am I rushing towards? It's going to be Groundhog Day again tomorrow. Why not take a moment to actually just look around me? And that's maybe what the biggest gift is. I've actually had to learn and stop and look at things like the butterflies and the things that I probably wouldn't have even noticed before, because I was too busy getting to the end of something, to the end of the day, to the end of the year, to the next event, to whatever.
Yeah.
I just think it's the gift of now, which I think we just don't live enough in.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. The gift of presence, right here, right now, this is all that really matters. My final question is that if someone's going to listen to this and they've just been diagnosed with something similar, is there any words that you can, you know, give to them that might, you know, help them with their journey, help them psychologically, emotionally, something like that?
You know, the hardest thing is, I think, when you get that diagnosis, they tend to rush you. They rush you into everything. They rush you into, oh, it's got to be chemotherapy. Oh, it's got to be radiotherapy. And you're going, oh, my God, I'll just do everything they tell me to do. And I really think that the best thing that happened for me was my surgeon sent me to a psychologist.
Right.
And I said, yeah, I don't need it. I know what's happened. I've been through breast cancer with my mom. And she said, I just want to make sure you're ready for this operation and you know what's to come. And I went, oh, so that is probably the best thing that I did. I went to a psychologist and just realized what I was carrying around to the point where he said, I don't even know how you're standing. Like, how are you doing this? I'm like, oh my God, what have I done to myself? So yeah, if it was anything that someone take a little bit of time, ask them if you've got a couple of weeks that you can just think about it for a moment, do your own research, sometimes get a second opinion, and it's not the last day. That's the thing you got to remember, that the day you get the diagnosis isn't your last day. And if I could, you know, bottle up what 2.5 years feels like now, 2 years going, you know what, you get a lot calmer as it goes on. I'd give it to everybody. Just look, just take 2 weeks to, I was listening to a great podcast yesterday on this new podcast I've discovered called Cancer Secrets. And he said that his wife got diagnosed with breast cancer and they took a trip. They took a holiday. They went sailing for 3 weeks, no phone connection, no internet. They just went away and they just spent time together and really thought about it. And then he thought, you know what, I'm just going to start researching now that we're back. And so she went in and had a surgery and that, but it was just a little bit of time, because I think you feel so rushed. And I was lucky, I was in the public system, so I had a month before they actually did the final operation. And in that month is when the doors started opening and I just started listening to my gut instinct, and one person would lead me to another person, like another specialist. And it's amazing how I found my team of people, because I actually had time. So time, don't rush into it. If you can ask them for a little bit of time, can we just have a couple of weeks just to sink in, just to work out how we're going to manage it and just get ourselves together. And then we'll, you know, embrace whatever which decision we're going to do.
Yeah.
But time. If you can just sit back and say, look, do I have a couple of weeks? Can I just have a couple of weeks to just think?
Yeah. That's really powerful. That's really powerful. And Michelle, I just want to tell you that I find you really fucking inspiring and I love you. And I know that we're not like super close, but I just think a lot of you, and I really appreciate you showing up and being open to having this conversation and diving deep into, you know, what we've been talking about.
Well, thanks. And look, if anyone wants to know what I do, which is on a natural level, I set up a little Facebook, the Little Red Socks, and they are the little red socks that you have in hospital that they put on your feet. And I just post things about whether I'm doing, you know, vitamin C therapy, what meals I'm cooking, different things that people often don't know where to start. I get a lot of people behind the scenes DM me and I send them information. So I'm always happy to do that for people. I'm not, as I said, I'm no doctor. I've got no other experience than my own experiences. But, you know, if it opens up a door for somebody else to maybe think outside the box and quell that fear a little bit, that's what I'm here. You know, I hope that one person can be helped by the things that I put out there.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what I'll do is when I post this, I'll put a link down to Little Red Socks so they can find you.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds great.
Awesome. Well, hey, let's hope we see some yellow butterflies today. If I do, I'm going to message.
I'm sure we will. If not yellow, there'll be some other beautiful color.
Yeah.
So have a great day. And I love your family and I love you guys. And I know, as you said, we don't see each other a lot in that, but you're always in my thoughts. And stay well and happy.
Thanks so much, Michelle. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye, friend.